as well as imagination. So figuring it out is the measuring of the world, the metering. And meter also is the Greek word for mother. Without being pushed, your thoughts will come to silence. That is to say, all the verbal symbolic chatter going on in the skull. Don't try and get rid of it, because that will again produce the illusion that there's a controller. Just, it goes on, and finally it gets tired of itself and bored and stops. And so then there's a silence. And this is a deeper level of meditation.
They'll always miss the point. They will always be there rather than here. It's very funny to come to California, you know, when you've lived elsewhere and it's been an ideal, and suddenly you wake up and you realize you're there. You know, you're on vacation. You've got there. And everybody else envies you.
Nothing going to happen at all. So what you got to worry about? Well, we don't quite like that idea, because it spooks us. You know, what's it be like to die? To go to sleep and never, never, never wake up? Well, a lot of things it's not going to be like. It's not going to be like being buried alive. It's not going to be like being in the darkness forever. I tell you what, it's going to be like as if you never had existed at all. Not only you, but everything else as well. That just there was never anything, and there's no one to regret it. And there's no problem. Well, think about that for a while. It's kind of a weird feeling you get when you really think about that. You really imagine it. Just to stop altogether. And you can't even call it stop, because you can't...
About ourselves, our ideas of ourselves, our images of ourselves, with ourselves. Now, of course, reality, from a philosopher's point of view, is a dangerous word. A philosopher will ask me, what do I mean by reality? Am I talking about the physical world of nature? Or am I talking about a spiritual world? Or what? And to that,
we're so far away from it, that the stars in the Big Dipper are in the same position. But imagine looking at it from somewhere else in space altogether, and those stars would not look like a dipper. They'd be in another position. Now then, what is the true position of those stars? Don't you see there isn't one? Because wherever you look, the position alters. You could say that the true situation of those stars is how they are looked at from all points of view, all possible points of view. Inside the constellation, looking outwards, outside the constellation, looking inwards, from everywhere and everywhere. But you see, there is no such thing as the truth. The world, in other words, is not existing independently of those who witness it. And wheresoever beings exist throughout all galaxies, it doesn't make any difference. You are all of them. And when they come into being, that's you coming into being. You know that very well. Only you don't have to remember the past in the same way you don't have to think about how you work your thyroid gland or whatever else it is in your organism. You don't have to know how to shine the sun. You just do it. Like you breathe. Doesn't it really astonish you that you are this fantastically complex thing? And that you're doing all of this and you never had any education in how to do it? You never learned, but you're this miracle? Well, the point is that from a strictly physical, scientific standpoint, this organism
is a continuous energy with everything else that's going on. And if I am my foot, I am the sun. And this is conveyed in a symbol which is called Indra's net. Imagine a multidimensional spider's web in the early morning covered with dewdrops. And every dewdrop contains the reflection of all the other dewdrops. And in each reflected dewdrop, the reflections of all the other dewdrops in that reflection. And so ad infinitum. That is the Buddhist conception of the universe in an image. The Japanese call that jiji muge. A ji means a thing event, a happening. So between happening and happening, mu, there is no ge, separation, still desire. They're therefore drawn back into the cycle. The bodhisattva goes back into the cycle with his eyes wide open, voluntarily, and allows himself to be sucked in. And this is normally interpreted as an act of supreme compassion. And bodhisattvas can assume any guise. They can get furiously angry if necessary in order to discourage evil beings. Even could assume the role of a prostitute and live that way so as to deliver beings at that level of life. Could become an animal, become an insect, become a maggot, anything, you know. All deliberately and in full consciousness to carry on the work of the deliverance of all beings. Now that's the way the popular mind understands it. And therefore the bodhisattvas are all
revealed. And they like to leave the bottom unglazed. But look, you see how the glaze has been allowed to run. It's that we would call not neat at all. And you watch somebody make one of these. And I have watched a man just pick up the plate, and as he applies the design of the glaze, he just goes whoosh with a brush and lets it drop on, and it's done. There's another man who glazes. We've got to go back to metaphysical assumptions underlying Western common sense. And whether you are a Jew or a Christian or an agnostic or an atheist, you are not uninfluenced by the whole tradition of Western culture, the models of the universe which it has employed, which influence our very language, the structure of our thought, the very constitution of logic, which are going into, say, computers. The Western model of the universe is political and engineering or architectural. It is natural for a child to ask its mother, how was I made? It would be inconceivable for a Chinese child to ask, how was I made? It might ask, how was I grown?
Global families, because one of the things that the Buddhists did when they came to the Far East was they exploited ancestor worship. This was very clever of them. This being the great religion of China, the Buddhist priests performed services like requiem masses for the repose of the souls or for good incarnation, reincarnations for one's ancestors, and they made quite a thing out of that. And so they have memorial services for the departed, and that's one of the principal functions of temples in Japan. People don't go to temple in the same way as Westerners go to church. They make pilgrimages to temples.
And say, at a great temple like Eheji, you will find on a Sunday morning. Thing to be talked about, and to have books written about it, and to have art historians going cluck, 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 and so on. The moment it becomes that, it becomes the same kind of thing as poetry, which can't be understood unless you know the illusions. It becomes academic painting. So Sengai restores to 17th century Japanese art painting that you can do not to be a little fake gallery artist, but to thoroughly enjoy yourself with a brush.
I accept you as you are. I am not out, therefore, to save the world. Of course, when a stream, a bubbling spring, flows out from the mountains, it's doing its thing. And if a thirsty traveler helps himself, well, that's fine. When a bird sings, it doesn't sing for the advancement of music. But if somebody stops to listen and is delighted, that's fine. And so I talk in the same spirit. I don't have a group of followers. I'm not trying to make disciples. Because I work on the principle of a physician rather than a clergyman. A physician is always trying to get rid of his patients and send them away.
So that's recollection. You can think of it too in another way, and it's really the same way if you think it through. I'm going to leave you with a few puzzles so that you can think them through, and I won't explain them. But another way is to be recollected is to be completely here and now. Are you here and now? Are you really here? There was a wise old boy who used to give lectures on these things, and he would get up and not say a word. He would just look at the audience. And he'd examine every person individually. And they'd all start feeling uncomfortable. He wouldn't say anything. He'd look at them all. And then he'd suddenly say, "Wake up! You're all asleep. And if you don't wake up, I won't give you any lecture." Are you here, recollected? See, most people aren't. They're bothering about yesterday and wondering what they're going to do tomorrow. And aren't all here. That's a definition of sanity, to be all there. So to be recollected is to be completely alert, available for the present. Because that's the only place that you are ever going to be in. Yesterday doesn't exist. Tomorrow never comes. There is only today. A great Sanskrit sort of invocation says, "Look to this day, for it is life. In its brief course lie all the realities of our existence. Yesterday is but a memory. Tomorrow is only a vision. Look well then to this day. Such is the salutation of the dawn." So, that is to say, if we keep the model of the king of the universe, and the creatures are all subjects of the king, then a god who is responsible for evil is being very unkind to other people. But in this theory, God is not another person. There are no victims of God. He's never anything but his own victim. You are responsible. And if you want to stay in the state of illusion, stay in it. But you can always wake up.
Well, now,
What I want to do is have a mutual brain-picking session, and I'm going to start the ball rolling by saying why I, as a philosopher, am interested in many things that you are all probably interested in professionally. Basically, and if you are not very careful at that point, you'll proclaim yourself God Almighty in the Hebrew Christian sense. Like Freud alleges, babies feel that they're omnipotent. And in a way they are. I am omnipotent insofar as I'm the universe. But I'm not omnipotent in the role of Alan Watts. Only cunning. So now then, this sensation of the happening is basic to all we want to explore. With that in mind, we can go on now to the question of pain and our so-called reactions to it. And once again, you will... moment. And therefore, if you meditate for an ulterior motive, that is to say, to improve your mind, to improve your character, to be more efficient in life, you've got your eye on the future and you are not meditating. Because the future is a concept. It doesn't exist. As the proverb says, tomorrow never comes. There is no such thing as tomorrow. There never will be. That is the state of samadhi. And you get to that state by the practice of meditation. Every Buddha figure practically is seen in the sitting posture of meditation, which is sitting down quietly and being aware of all that goes on without comment, without thinking about it. And when you stop categorizing, verbalizing, talking to yourself inside your head, naturally, the separations between, for example, knower and known, self and other, simply vanish. Can you point to the difference between my five fingers? Where will you put your finger if you want to point to the... difference? ...is to get rid of something. To get rid of a false problem with which you are wrestling, so that the problem will disappear as a result of understanding the story. And you'll see from the story that I told you that what happened was the disappearance of a problem. Because Eka, when he looked for his mind that was giving him so much trouble, couldn't find it. There was a master walking in the forest with a group of his disciples, and suddenly he picked up a tree branch and said to one of the monks, "What is it?" And the monk hesitated, didn't answer immediately, so the teacher hit him with it. So he turned to another monk and said, "What is it?" And the monk said, "Give it to me so that I can see." And the master tossed him the branch. He caught it and he hit the master with it. And so the master said, "Well, you got out of that dilemma."
Paid. The fiber in muscle. The grain in wood. So Joseph Needham translates it organic pattern. And that's what's going on. And there isn't any stuff involved. What stuff is a pattern seen out of focus, where it becomes fuzzy. Like kapok, see? We say kapok is the stuffing of a cushion.
This apparently morbid and dismal thinking, bright things will begin to arise, because you will realize that what Kali is the most far-out act
that the Supreme Self can put on. The symbol of complete alienation from itself. So what happens, you see, is this. In the process of the game of hide and seek, the Supreme Self tries to see how far out it can get. Just like children like to sit around and have a competition as to who can make the most hideous face. And so this gets worse and worse as the time cycle goes on, until at the end of the Kali Yuga, Shiva puts in an appearance, and he's all black, and he has 10 arms, and he dances a dance called the Tandava. And in dancing the Tandava, the whole universe... You put it up instead of putting it down, and you say about rocks, they're really conscious, but a very primitive form of consciousness. Because after all, when I take even this crystal here, which is glass, and go... Well, it makes a noise. And that response, that resonance, is an extremely primitive form of consciousness. Our consciousness is much more subtle than that. But when you hit a bell and it rings, you touch a crystal and it responds. As game playing. And that's why when people take their games seriously and put on stern and pious expressions, the fool gets the giggles. Because he knows it's all a game. When I say that he sees everything as a game, this does not mean mere game. Hamlet, although it's a play, is not mere entertainment. Or when you go to listen to a great orchestra, it is playing music indeed. But you are not seeing something purely frivolous.